The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. But you know what? Andrew, take down the Big Lead sound behind me here. Because you know what? I'm gonna break format, as we say in the business. And I'm going to push kind of the traditional way we do Big Lead stories. I'm going to push that to probably the bottom of the hour here. You know why? Because you and I have to have a heart-to-heart. We don't do this often enough. We don't talk, just you and me. Actually, that's all we do. That's actually the entirety of the show. But sometimes I just spend an inordinate amount of time thinking about the show. And it's probably to my detriment, you know, as far as just being healthy. But sleep did not come easy last night. And so about 3:30 this morning, I'm listening to a podcast. And it was, oh my goodness, it was a great conversation. Bill Simmons, who is one of the most prolific podcasters in the country, he had on one of my favorite writers, Chuck Klosterman, as his guest. And they were talking about sports, and then they moved on to the Fyre Festival, that bogus Woodstock wannabe down in the Caribbean. And there are these competing documentaries on Netflix and Hulu about the Fyre Festival, but they got off into such an absolutely fascinating place in the conversation. And one of the things Chuck Klosterman, who I don't know if you've ever read his books of essays, but that's among my favorite books, is the Chuck Klosterman essays. And yes, it is not Klosterman, like everybody else pronounces it. But what he was saying is that he doesn't really have agency over his worldview. And he started to explain. He said his childhood, the way he grew up, his teen years, he didn't really plan how all of that was going to go. As he moved into his 20s, it wasn't by dint of forethought that he went through life. But all of those elements of his life have led him to the worldview that he has now. And his worldview is probably very different from mine, but that whole notion just absolutely fascinated me. About to what extent is your worldview the product of some conscious steering that you have made to navigate your worldview versus, okay, your life is the sum total of your experiences. And I like to think that I'm a bit of a, and I know you're wondering, where in the world is he going with all of this? And why don't we have a Big Lead right now instead of this? I'm going somewhere. And I am getting to a couple of big news stories in talking about this. But the way I arrived at my worldview is, like Chuck Klosterman said, my childhood, my teen years. I fell in love when I was 21 years old. And, you know, here we are 36 years later. And that's guided my worldview. God gave me three daughters. And that's affected my worldview differently than if I had boys. And everything. I mean, but I also, in my mid-teens to early 20s, I embarked on this journey of goal setting and trying to have some control over my destiny, because I grew up with the thought that we didn't have any control over it. And so there's a combination of, you know, I'm a cork in the river, but I also, you know, have guided the current a little bit. The reason I bring all of this up today is because we've been talking about some really emotional stuff on this show the last several days. And one thing that I always vowed to you was that I would never alter my opinion because I thought it was something that people wanted to hear. Because I don't like listening to phonies. And I think that talk radio in particular, it reveals inauthenticity more than any other medium. Because you and I are sharing, if you're, you know, one of those P1 listeners who hangs out for 3 hours every day, you know, 15 hours a week, you probably know more about me and my life, my worldview than, you know, most other people in your life. And I don't think people are going to listen to someone who's inauthentic. So I said I will never alter my opinion because of what people want to hear, or my perception of what people want to hear. Now, because of this worldview, much of which I had no agency over, because it was just the product of how I grew up and how I developed, as I started paying attention to the world around me. As I started paying attention, as I started developing this worldview, it turns out I'm kind of out of touch with most of Seattle. The city, the people who live in the city. I'm out of touch in my worldview. But there's a certain percentage of people in the city, and then a lot of people who have kind of shared my life experience, who lived in the city and moved to the suburbs, or maybe you live in the rural areas and you can't believe how crazy things have gotten in Seattle, and you like to look and kind of laugh or just be sad at how crazy things have gotten. And through not altering the worldview, we've enjoyed incredible success on the show, beyond what I ever could have reasonably dreamed of. And I want to thank you for that. You know, whether you are the people who disagree with me and tell me what a horrible person I am, and I hear that a lot. Or if you are indifferent, like some of the stuff, don't like some of the stuff, or maybe you love everything. But I appreciate you, regardless of whether you agree or disagree. So, why am I bringing this up and talking so in-depth and talking with such passion? I mentioned this yesterday, and I'm going to bring it up again right now. I know a lot of people, for reasons that I've tried to clearly articulate, the issue nationwide that has been the hottest topic the last week or so is this trend, late-term abortion. Now, I'm not going to talk in depth about that. I will a little bit. But I care passionately about that issue, not because I think pro-choice people are horrible. Because as I've acknowledged many times, if you believe life begins at conception, or if you believe it begins at viability outside of the mom, I respect that that's the viewpoint that you've gotten to. I don't think anybody can reasonably argue that 2 minutes before birth, that's not a person. I don't think coming through the birth canal is when life begins. And I really don't understand that that's become such a hot-button issue. And so yesterday I led the show with the fact that Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse, who we invited to come on the show today, he wasn't able to work it into his schedule. But he introduced a bill. And it was spiked by Washington State Senator Patty Murray to me, there was no bigger local story yesterday than that. And I looked at the local newspaper. I checked all the local TV stations. And I have respect for all of them as news outlets. But none of them even mentioned it. That the most talked about issue in the country for the last couple of weeks, a Washington state senator became the focal point of that story on the floor of the Senate. And nobody in local media thought that that was even worthy of a mention. Why is that? Well, I'll tell you exactly why it is. And I do think, and this is when I say I appreciate you, I do think it's what is setting our show apart and why we're enjoying the greatest success we ever had. Here's Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse introducing this motion that he thought would be so universally acceptable that everybody in the Senate would say, yes, I agree with that, and we approve it by unanimous consent.
Now we're talking about keeping a baby comfortable while the doctors have a debate about infanticide. That is what we're talking about here on the floor tonight. We're not talking about second trimester abortion. We're not having some big complicated discussion about a mother's reproductive freedom, as important as all those debates are. We are actually talking about babies that have been born. The only debate on the floor tonight is about infanticide.
Okay, and he was talking about the Virginia governor who said, yeah, if a mom gives birth and the baby's alive after birth, the governor of Virginia said, well, she and the doctor will talk about whether they're going to give it any medical attention or if they're just going to let it die. And, I mean, he said, Ben Sasse said, That's appalling. That's not talking about is it at birth or is it at viability outside of the mom or even if it's at, you know, minutes before birth. He said, now we're talking in America about letting babies die after they've been born.
This isn't about a clump of cells. This is about fourth trimester abortion. That's actually what we're talking about here tonight. Governor Northam is a disgraced coward. And he has such an abysmally low view of human dignity that he couldn't bring himself to say this basic truth. It's wrong to let little babies who've been born die. He couldn't say it. This isn't about Republicans and Democrats. We're way beyond that. Everyone in the Senate ought to be able to say unequivocally that the little baby deserves life, that she has rights, and that killing her is wrong. And tonight, every member of this body has that chance.
So he thought that, well, in America, of course. And he clarified what his bill was.
The Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act prohibits exactly the kind of infanticide that Governor Northam was endorsing. That's it. That's what the legislation is about. There are only two sides of the debate on the floor tonight. You're either for babies or you're defending infanticide. That is actually what the legislation is that's before us.
Now, you can agree or disagree with Ben Sasse on anything that he said. You can agree or disagree with Patty Murray, who became the only person in the United States Senate, the longtime senator from Washington State, to say, nope, I object, and we will not pass this by unanimous consent because it only takes one to prevent unanimity.
Please don't block this legislation.
Mr. President.
Senator from Washington.
Mr. President, we have laws against infanticide in this country. This is a gross misinterpretation of the actual language of the bill that is being asked to be considered, and therefore I object.
Objection is heard.
With all due respect, Mr. President.
Senator from Nebraska.
To the senator from Washington, the bill that we're talking about before this body tonight is because New York and Virginia, New York already, and Virginia in debate are having a conversation about removing exactly these protections.
I'm not asking you to choose sides here. But is that a news story? That an issue that so many people are passionate about on both sides, and I respect the passion on both sides, that here we are in Seattle, Washington, and the mom in tennis shoes, longtime senator from our region, blocked this on the U.S. Senate. not asking anybody to take sides, although you probably have. But is that a news story? Because honest to goodness, if I hadn't talked about this on my radio show, nobody in the Pacific Northwest would know about this unless you saw it on the internet. You didn't see it on TV. You didn't read it in the newspaper. Isn't that at least worthy of a mention? But here's what's going on. That while I talk about these issues because of sincere passion and because I vowed that I would never be a phony with you, we have news outlets that have decided that if some, because I don't think this reflects very favorably on Patty Murray. And so we have news outlets that chose to bury it. You know what? If we don't report it, it didn't happen. And nobody will say anything bad about Patty Murray. Because we see it, they say, as our primary objective to provide journalistic and public opinion cover to the politicians that we like. And if we have to spike a story, and I haven't checked in the last few hours, but you know, we put this, my comments yesterday on My Northwest. We have a Facebook post. Facebook has over 500 comments. My Northwest was over 160 at 6 a.m. today. And I'm not asking people to agree or disagree with me, but it's a news story. But not in the view of any newspaper or TV. My radio show is the only one that covers it. Because somewhere along the way, I think some people have decided that it's their primary objective to not be sincere, not be authentic, but as an operation to provide political cover. And I just, you know, how many other stories have gotten spiked? The Ed Murray child rape story, allegedly, got spiked by news operations because they liked him and what he stood for politically. And they spiked it for years. How many things are kept hidden from you? Because it doesn't fit the ideology of other outlets. And so I'm passionate about this. And I wanted to say thank you because in just doing the show, the only way that I ever knew how, the only way I ever envisioned when I first pitched this 24 years ago, we're getting the best response ever. And I just want you to know that I really appreciate you being along for the ride because these are crazy, passionate times. And I want to say thank you. And that's what I have to say about that. Okay, I delayed the big lead. I'm going to get into our big lead next, right after Ursula checks the news here on the Dory Monson Show. Oh, my goodness. What a response. Thank you for all the comments, even the ones who disagree, on the Online Trading Academy text line, 98973. But a lot of you are responding to my opening comments today. I should have tweeted out that I was going to, that I needed to have some special one-on-one time with you at the beginning of the show today. I should have given people a heads up about that. You know what else I did last night? I didn't even know I was going to do this. I just started watching the State of the Union and a couple wise cracks popped into my head. So I just tweeted them. And then I ended up live tweeting the entire State of the Union. So if you want to go see all my comments, just go follow me at Dory Monson, D-O-R-I-M-O-N-S-O-N. Did you already play the big lead open here, Andrew? Oh, Okay, I haven't even done any big lead stories. So let's get to the big lead.
The big lead, Dory Monson show exclusive.
Okay, I'm going to do another big I told you so here. Kind of. Because as you just heard in Ursula's newscast, there are some reports that, let's see, I saw this at comonews.com, where they initially reported patient zero identified in measles outbreak. And the story reads, state health officials say the first person to contract measles in the latest outbreak in our state was someone from outside the country. Now, as you just heard in Ursula's newscast, they're saying it was a kid from Eastern Europe, and we don't know if he came in from Eastern Europe or if he visited there. I did a story last week where I said, you know what I would love to know? I would love to know if illegal immigration is at all connected to, you know, 2 weeks ago, I was talking about the record murder spree in Yakima and Yakima County. And the sheriffs there said, I wish we knew if there was some common link, but we don't know. So I got the sheriff on and I said, can you tell me if any of the perps or victims are illegals? He goes, no, we don't ask that. And I said, well, you said you want to know if there's a common link. If you aren't even allowed to ask that question, if you're not allowed to get the data, then how can you start to solve the crime or the trend, figure out the trend line? And I had some people who contacted me. There was a New York Times story in 2016. And that's when measles, which had largely been eradicated from the United States, and measles started to resurge in the U.S. in 2016, according to the New York Times, not exactly some right-wing rag, but measles started to reemerge at a illegals detention center in Arizona in 2016. And then some listeners contacted me and said, well, this is a largely immigrant population, we're told, an immigrant church. And it was, you know, happened to be, I think, Russian or Eastern European down in Vancouver, Washington. And people said, is there some connection here? And I did a piece. And I said, I'd love to know. I would love to know if there's a connection. And so when I saw this story last night that said patient zero was someone who came from outside the country, we contacted the state epidemiologist. Nicole contacted the spokesperson for him, and she responded, the spokesperson, we have never identified patient zero. We identified and announced our first confirmed case, a child who had traveled outside of the country. We have never said this was patient zero. And they said they couldn't talk to us about it because I wanted to ask, do we know if it's connected to illegals? And when I did that last week, people said, oh, that's racist. No, I am data oriented. And when our politicians, when Jay Inslee, every chance he gets, Dow Constantine, Jenny Durkin, when they stand up and they say, we're a sanctuary city, sanctuary county, sanctuary state, and they tell us about all the wondrous benefits, but if, say, the murder spree in Burien is connected to gangs of illegals, oh, we don't know. We don't gather that data. And so they tell us something that is irrefutable, they think, because they don't allow data to be gathered that could refute it. And so then they tell us, well, no, illegals commit fewer crimes than anybody else. How do you know? How many crimes do they commit? Well, we don't gather that info. So how can you tell us they commit fewer crimes? Yakima. I mean, I think a lot of people know that the gang wars there that have led to record murders are connected to illegals. And when I asked the sheriff, is there a connection? Oh, we don't know. We don't gather that. And I asked the question. The New York Times said the resurgence was at a detention center or a detention camp. And we know that this was apparently a kid who came from outside the country. Did he come in legally or illegally? We don't know. And so it's a very carefully constructed system by our politicians to tell us that harboring illegals, and we have as many per capita as any state in the United States, and in just gross numbers, the fifth most in the United States. And they tell us about all the benefits, societal benefits, but we are not allowed access to any data that could possibly in any way contradict what our politicians tell us about that. And so, once again, I feel like, you know, like I said with the first half hour topic, we are willing to bring up issues that are taboo everywhere else in the media. And when I saw that last night, when we were kind of trying to connect some dots last week, and they said patient zero. And now, again, epidemiologist says, no, we'd never use the phrase patient zero. And some news outlets have mischaracterized it. That's fine. All I've ever said is I wish we had access to data when politicians tell us about all the wondrous benefits of an important social issue and policy, but they do not allow any data to be gathered that could possibly contradict that. That's a very disingenuous way to present an argument. Let me take a quick time out. The other big issue, homelessness, and it's down in Olympia. That was a very contentious issue yesterday. You'll hear what they had to say because some politicians are furious that Seattle waits so long to clear things from along the freeway. They're saying it could be a real hazard to motorists. It's a pretty interesting case. Details next on the Dory Monson Show. Oh, there is frustration down in Olympia. Even our bluer than blue legislature, they're starting to get kind of red hot over the homeless camps alongside our freeways. I mentioned, a week and a half or so ago, I'm driving north on I-5, right between the 45th and 50th Street off ramps into the U District. There is a pile of trash and tarps on that little green belt there. And Seattle says, well, we have to give 72 hours notice. And they can't get. There are 400 homeless encampments in the city alone. And they can only get to so many every few weeks. And then once they get there, they're required to give 72 hours notice. And there are senators in Olympia who are saying, this is ridiculous. We're going to see one of these tarps, one of these makeshift tents is going to fly out onto the freeway and people could be killed because of Seattle's policy that tolerates this. Here is Senator Hobbs saying this is a big safety issue.
And I've seen a lot of tents and debris. One time I saw a tent nearly blow into the highway. Luckily, some folks grabbed onto the tent. I've seen a shopping cart almost go in the highway. We've already had one death of a person rolling into the highway. There might be more. The other issue is having toured the state and talking to the rank and file DOT maintenance workers who are out there, the hardworking men and women. It's unsafe for them.
John Stossel has a new piece up about what's going on in San Francisco, and he says that he has covered personally as a reporter for ABC News and since then, that he's been to some of the worst slums in Haiti and India. He says parts of San Francisco are that bad. It's just people in human waste and rats. And we have some of that now in some of these encampments here. And again, I think we have to offer services to every single person who's out on the street and offer them a place to a room, but they don't want it. They would rather live the life of stealing to get their next fix and heroin addiction and sleeping by I-5. But the senator says, look, 72 hours, somebody could die because of the flying debris in that amount of time.
I mean, 72 hours in that area where I see someone where a tent being blown, that's dangerous. And 72 hours on an incline right there, that's dangerous. I've seen, and we've all seen it, where you have tents on sides of hills.
Oh, and Senator Curtis King, man, he went off on this too.
There's people in the middle of between two roads in downtown Seattle and Yakima. And there's three adults standing there, and one of them's holding the baby. Now, what chance does that baby have? And we want to talk about doing all these things. At some point, we got to step up and man up and get it done. And yeah, it's going to cost a heck of a lot of money to do it. But we can't continue to do what we're doing because we're not solving the problem. We're not even coming close. And yeah, it's transportation, but it's a whole lot of other things. And at some point, we as a state say enough is enough, because it isn't just about the homeless. It's about all of the other people that they impact, the workers that we're talking about here. We need to get this addressed. We need to get it done, and we need to find the money to do it. Thank you.
Yeah, it's always about money. Yeah, we spend $1 billion. $1 billion over the last 10 years on homelessness. Has the problem gotten any better? No. It's gotten much worse, because the word is out that we will not prosecute you. You can shoot up heroin in front of cops. And by the way, every time I say that, I get messages, whether they be text or others. You cannot shoot up heroin in front of a cop. Baloney. Because I had a listener a year ago who sent me a picture of someone sitting downtown Seattle shooting heroin between their toes because it was the place where there wasn't any scar tissue. What are the cops going to do when the prosecutor has already said, I'm not going to prosecute any personal possession of heroin? So, yes, you absolutely can shoot up in front of cops, because the cops are not going to waste their time writing up something when the prosecutor has already said he won't prosecute it. You don't think that word has gotten around the country? That we are the lowest barrier region. And yes, one of these days, one of those tents is going to blow in front of somebody's windshield. And it's, yes, we have compassion for the homeless, but we got to watch out for each other too. Best 15 next.